basically anytime you pitched it to me and I was like, I don't have anything, which I think happened like three
times.
Yeah,
I guess that...
That was me thinking like, this is the end of the episode. And then we just kept going.
Just beating that dead horse, I guess. What's up? This is Movies on Up. Strange is Relative. My podcast relative, my podcast brother, Mr. Dave Bacella, is seated right across from me.
That's me.
Relative to you on your iPod device right across from you. That's Mr. Dave. I am Ryan. Strange is Relative is our tagline for this week. If you think you know what movie that comes from, send your guess to us in one of the three following ways. You can send your guess to us. moviesonup@gmail.com. You can leave it on our Facebook page, facebook.com/moviesonup, or get at us on the Twitter @moviesonup if you are correct. And if we choose you, we will send to you a prize package full of all sorts of spooky delights for this, the month of Halloween, as it's often referred to. It started mistakenly, and now it just sort of catches on. That's how much Dave and I like the season of Halloween so much that we devote this entire month of the podcast to it. Last week, we kicked off Halloween month with our 31 movies to watch during the month of October, which certainly Dave and I will watch all 31 of those movies again, as well as probably some extra ones. And our discussion episode on Nightbreed, which was kind of near and dear to Dave's heart from a long, long time, back from his grade school days, reading the Clive Barker novel Cabal instead of finishing his tests, which probably says
after
why.
I finished my test.
After, yeah, he would rush through his tests just to read that book, which is probably why Dave is seated in this attic doing this podcast with me. I don't have any kind of excuse as to why I ended up here. This week and the next week, we actually have kind of a theme. This week is a vampire theme where we're going to do what we do in the shadows just from last year, and then later on in the week, we'll be doing The Lost Boys. What We Do in the Shadows was a movie from 2015 directed by Jermaine Clement and Taika Waititi, which kind of hit me like a lightning bolt. I'm not really sure why, but I ended up loving this movie and watching it several times when I first saw it, starring the aforementioned Taika Waititi, Jermaine Clement, Johnny Brew, and Corey Gonzalez Mouser. It opened to about $89,000 February 13th of 2015. It was good for 41st place in the box office that week. Your top five that week: 50 Shades of Grey, Kingsman, The Secret Service, the SpongeBob movie, Sponge Out of Water, American Sniper, and Jupiter Ascending. I do specifically remember going to see the 50 Shades of Grey movie this weekend for Valentine's Day. It's amazing how that was such kind of a phenomenon, and it's been essentially 2 years before we'll get the sequel on that. That's how much people have been clamoring for that. Just to do it justice, I believe that What We Do in the Shadows was released on about five screens. So if you do the per screen average of $17,000, it puts it second only behind 50 Shades of Grey. So clearly people were clamoring for a love story that week.
Yeah, and I mean, Jermaine Clement, Flight of the Conchords has its own following.
Yeah,
he's done some other movie stuff, so like he's built his audience, and Waititi, he's building an awesome resume so far. So I mean, I understand not releasing it wide, but it is one of those that if you put in an area where people pay attention to movies, like, yeah, it's gonna do well because you know what you're getting with these guys.
Certainly, and it did very, very well where it was at. It went on to gross about $3.4 million domestically, which puts it at number 5,761 on the all-time domestic list, behind the 1990 Diane Keaton, Carol Kane classic.
I don't know.
The Lemon Sisters, and one spot ahead of Oliver Stone's 1988 film about talk radio.
I don't remember what that was called.
Talk Radio.
That's it.
Is what it was called. Whereas maybe we had some problems trying to classify Nightbreed as to what kind of a movie it is. This one I feel like is pretty easy to classify. It's a comedy. This is Spinal Tap, but with vampires.
Yeah, and they don't try to be anything else. They don't try to add a horror element to it. It's a mockumentary. It's a comedy. It feels like a Christopher Guest style movie, but not with Christopher Guest style. So, I mean, Spinal Tap is a good example because it is just... it's a mockumentary. It's a silly, ridiculous world that it's funny. and the characters are funny. They build it. They're not doing anything spectacular. You're just following these characters that are entertaining.
As much as we like horror, I think Dave and I both do appreciate comedy, and certainly there are different kinds of comedy. You sort of hinted at it with the Christopher Guest. I mean, I loved the Concord stuff that Clement did, and I think that this movie is in that vein. There's certainly some ties there. It manages to be dry, which you would expect from a Christopher Guest kind of movie, but completely silly at the same time. I feel like it's sort of English in that respect, but from two dudes from New Zealand.
Yeah, and I almost said like if Christopher Guest were from England.
Right.
Because it is their style of humor. They are from New Zealand, but it's that very English. It's dry. It's insane and it's silly, but nobody's recognizing how silly it is.
It's
which
a little,
is,
I mean, it's farcical in a way.
Yeah.
Not unlike Monty Python.
It's exaggerated but grounded at right. the same time.
Yeah, which is certainly an interesting way to describe a movie about vampires. But specifically, Waititi's got a super interesting career. If his career would have ended after this movie, he'd be like a really great offbeat comedic director. Probably before this, and maybe still is at this point, best known for Eagle versus Shark.
That movie rules from 2007.
Right. And then he's got stuff like this. He's doing that The Wilder People movie.
Hunt for the Wilder People.
Yeah.
One of the best movies of the year.
Oh, you saw it.
Yeah.
Rad. It's,
and then he did The Inbetweeners. He did mm-hmm. a few episodes of The Inbetweeners. And then what we're building up to.
Right. He goes from directing these offbeat comedy movies to the director of Thor 3, Thor Ragnarok.
Yeah. And it's funny because you wonder like, oh, is that. Marvel has a good habit of finding directors. They're not going after the big-time directors, and they're kind of letting them do what they want with the franchise. Thor 2 didn't really do that,
right?
And I think they're paying for it. To bring him into Thor 3, which is essentially a buddy movie, I think is going to be a big, drastic increase over the second, or improvement over the right. second Thor movie. And if you worry about, oh, did Marvel take this really humorous guy and are they going to tone him down? They let
James
him make
Gunn.
Team Thor. They yeah. let him make a short movie about where Thor was during Civil War, and then they released it online, and it's just Thor living in a random apartment with some random dude.
With Daryl.
Yeah, Daryl. And it feels a lot like what we do in Shadows, where it's this real weird scenario that's grounded but hilarious. So it's like, okay, they know what they got. Like, that shows that Marvel gets it. They know what they got this guy for.
They know what they got. I'm super interested in how Thor is going to be received, because I don't think people are going to go into it expecting it to be as funny as what I perceive it's going to be. I think maybe the most laughs in a Marvel movie, maybe Ant-Man, maybe Guardians, but certainly I don't think that Iron Man has its moments with Robert Downey Jr. Yeah. I don't think there's a laugh a minute in any of the Captain America stuff. And Thor, I don't think screams comedy to me. I honestly think that this is going to come out of left field for people.
I
think it's going to be really refreshing.
I do. And it's going to be very refreshing because you look at it, like, people are still clamoring, like, are we going to get an Iron Man 4? Oh, Civil War was great. I want to do a Captain America 4. I can't wait for Ant-Man and the Wasp. Doctor Strange. I want Guardians of the Galaxy 2.
Spider-Man.
Thor is kind of the bastard child because I thought the first Thor was really, really good. The second one, I think, is probably easily the weakest of the Marvel movies if you don't include the Hulk. So that Thor franchise doesn't have an identity. You don't know what you're going to get with it. So they have that freedom. And you're throwing the Hulk in there. He's grown into one of the most popular characters in the Avengers movies. He's not going to get a solo movie. So you're going to have him and Thor bump into each other in a different galaxy somewhere and turn into a buddy movie. And just to see Ruffalo's interactions with Tony Stark and with Black Widow, he's such a likable character. You're going to have that dynamic. And I think we're going to have a completely different Thor movie and something different for the Marvel movie.
And again, with it being called Thor Ragnarok, and Ragnarok is in Norse mythology the end of the world. So everything about this movie, you know, from some of the stuff outside of Team Thor, the footage that's been released, the marketing materials. Suit. Yeah, everything screams action movie. And then you kind of peer behind the scenes, and they said it was going to be a buddy comedy movie. It gets announced that this guy is the director, and you're thinking, I maybe is setting myself up to fail, but how much I do like Eagle versus Shark and how much I love What We Do in the Shadows, I have really high expectations for Thor now.
I do too. And to see Hemsworth in Ghostbusters this summer, it's like, I want to see him be funny more often.
Yeah.
And then you look at some of the Instagram and stuff that people on set have released. Like Hemsworth put up something with stupid little 15-second video with his stunt double, and it's like, they're having fun. It's maybe a movie about the end of the world, but something on that set is loose, and I think he has a lot to do with it.
And obviously, I think the guy is a talented director. He co-wrote this with Clement, so I think he's a good storyteller as well. But I also think, as far as an actor goes, he's really good in this. If you look at his IMDb profile, Watiti's got about as many directing credits as he has acting jobs. But I think he really created a very layered character here. We see him in that domestic role with the rest of his housemates, not unlike the Thor and Daryl. We get a little bit of that. I would think that maybe What We Do in the Shadows sort of rubbed off on that. But you see him in that domestic role, and then you also get that love story with him and the girl that he's been pining after for over 100 years.
Yeah, and just the dynamic between him and Vladislav, especially. Like, you can tell, like, oh, these guys have worked together a lot. Their chemistry is so good, and everybody in this movie, the main three, and then you throw Nick and Stu in there, and it's just, there's so much good about this movie, and there's so many good laughs. It's just so funny how it all builds up, because it's not really doing anything, but it is building up to something.
And I think that's just kind of a nod to how strong of a script that he wrote with Jermaine Clement. You don't really know where it's going when you start it, and it kind of isn't going anywhere for a while, and then it does sort of start to build. But it, from a humor standpoint, you've got quick one-liners that are in there. There's quite a few callbacks throughout the movie. You've got sight gags, whereas the movie, from a story perspective, maybe isn't progressing and isn't necessarily on a super fast pace. I think the jokes are there. So we're, even if they're not advancing the story necessarily, you're still getting some value in the humor. And some of those sight gags, like, I still piss my pants every time I see Jermaine's face on that cat. I love the sight gags in this movie.
It's a very British movie. It's got your sight gags. It's got your witty dialogue. It's got your just silly situations, like with the beast and everything. Like,
yeah.
The whole Nick and Stu thing, I absolutely love. And then, of course, the werewolves at the end. And I really hope we do get the sequel. They want to do We Are Wolves, which follows the
swearwolves.
Yeah, the pack of werewolves. I think Rhys Darby is one of the funniest dudes alive. So he was great as kind of the leader of the werewolves.
I think they did a good job of depicting vampires at sort of various points in history and various points in their own individual lives. Deacon's got that Nosferatu look that, oh, of course, like, that's an iconic vampire. Vladislav kind of has that iconic Dracula thing going. And then you go up to Nick, who is kind of like a dumb Twilight kind of vampire. So you really have sort of the vampire gamut covered, and they all do kind of have their individual personalities. And for them all to kind of be the same and to try and coexist in something as mundane as living together in, like, a house, I think is...
Except, I mean, just the concept of four, like, 30 to 40-some-year-old dudes living together. It's silly enough right there, because at that stage in your life, like, to have three or four other male roommates, there's enough there, but then you make them vampires. Nick's just kind of the outside, like, in the Peter and the vampire hunter. Like, there's so much. I mean, it is funny. It's one of those that, as I talk about more, like, more and more, come back to me, and because I didn't rewatch it recently, but it did make enough of an impression that I remember so much of it. As we talk about it, I just remember more and more, because there is a lot of great stuff in there.
I hope I'm not kind of setting it up to fail, but I do mention how much I like this movie, and it reminds me a lot of another movie that is kind of on hallowed ground around movies on up parts, and that's behind the mask. I think what both of these movies do really well is they know the genre and they take the tropes of that genre and use that for comedy. In this movie, they're showing the tropes of vampire life and how that would actually affect like the daily life of someone who's just trying to live essentially as a vampire. Something as simple as like they want to go out clubbing, so they get all dressed up, but since they can't see themselves in a mirror, they literally have to sketch what each other looks like. Obviously, some are better artists than others. They have to be invited into clubs. I mean, there's just so much stuff there for, you know, hundreds of years of vampire literature. There's so many things in there. You've got, I mentioned earlier, Jermaine turning into a cat, the shape-shifting. There's just so much stuff there that in most vampire movies is such serious stuff, but they completely turn it on its head here, like they do in Leslie Vernon.
Yeah, the only difference is Leslie Vernon builds that up and then uses all those horror tropes and puts them together into a horror movie.
Right.
This just stays comedy the whole time, which is fine. I love both movies. Obviously, you know, Leslie Vernon has a special place in my heart, but the mockumentary aspect of both of them, it is, because in Leslie Vernon, he's talking about how much cardio it takes to keep up with somebody that's running, but you look like you're walking. So it does play into all that. It's just the everyday life of a vampire with just stupid stuff like that. That there are these rules that you don't really think about. You think about them when you're doing battle with them, but you don't think about how it affects them in everyday, day-to-day activities.
Even something as simple as when Viago is in love with this girl, like she sent him the locket or whatever. You know, he can't wear it, so he puts it on there. You see him grit his teeth as it's starting to burn him. And then he gets that taken off, and that scene with him in the end, when you realize that he comes across this girl that he was in love with and has been in love with for 90 years, and she's old as shit, and of course she would be. It just kind of makes you think of that vampires, you know, everyone's forever young, and on the one hand, yes, but life does sort of go on without them, and it has, because they really have no idea how to hook up the internet. I guess it's sort of your standard fish out of water with respect to vampires don't use the internet. But I like the fact that they can basically take this genre and put it on its head. And it, even if you like vampire movies, I think that you'll like this. There's enough that's familiar to you, but it's going to make you laugh as well.
Yeah, because it's not, I don't want to say demeaning. Like, it's not, I mean, it is making fun of vampires, but it's not demeaning their entire existence.
Right.
Like, it's not ridiculing anybody that likes vampires or ridiculing the thought of vampires. It's just putting them in a situation that you haven't seen them in before.
It's just kind of like, these are the four worst vampires in existence. Here's them just being really bad at being vampires.
Yeah, here's dudes that are kind of stuck together for a long time.
A long, long time for sure. And the further we get into the story, you know, we mentioned vampires and we certainly mentioned wolves, but there are many more creatures that come into play, and they sort of have their own sub-societies, but yet they manage to get along and have big parties. You've got zombies that show up at the last party, witches that show up, and spoiler alert, it doesn't go well when Stu comes
a human.
A human shows up with the vampires. Pretty much everybody wants a piece of stew at that point. But I love that interplay between specifically the wolves and the vampires. It captures what some movies make really heavy drama. This is a century-old blood feud. And it kind of boils it down into what's a little bit more believable is two groups of dudes just kind of hurling insults back and forth at each other. It kind of reminds me of the old anchor battles, the anchor team battles in Anchorman, when they're just putting each other down.
I say the movie doesn't really go anywhere. Like, it does have its purpose, and it does lead up to the ball, which is a fun place to go to kind of build up to the end.
You get a payoff. You meet the beast.
Yeah, you meet the beast. You see all these other, because it's like, oh, if there's just random vampires living in a flat together trying to get through daily lives, like, why aren't there werewolves or witches or zombies? So you kind of see all that come to play, and you see them interact together. And like, yeah, why wouldn't they have a convention where they all just get together? So it's just silly. It's dumb. It's funny. It's just a highly entertaining movie.
Yeah, and you do get to see a little bit of a, these guys are somewhat set in their ways, but you do see a little bit of growth from them as, you know, they're able to integrate Nick into the group. Stu, for better or worse, kind of becomes group adjacent as well. I did love his character an awful lot.
Like in a vampire movie, Stu might be my favorite character. At least the storylines involving Stu.
Just, oh, absolutely.
Everything about Stu just makes me laugh. Like, he's probably not the best character, but he's one of the best things about this movie.
Stu is the straight guy in this movie. He's deadpan completely, like completely earnest. Just a regular dude. Could be not any more nondescript. It's just Stu. And then where he ends up and bringing these two groups together, I would love to see the wolves. I would be down with seeing zombies, witches, anything.
It's such a great premise that you can do anything with.
I mean, people are begging for the Thor Daryl series to be turned into a Netflix thing. I mean, we've seen stuff like this before, that single camera office style mockumentaries. Why couldn't we have, if it is the wolves, if that becomes a television show, or if it's what we do week to week in the shadows? It's rife, and these guys are so funny. Clement doing Flight of the Conchords does have some showy kind of writing in him that he could deliver episodes of stuff. I have a feeling that Waititi's going to be a lot busier after Ragnarok comes out. But it's a great collection of some really, really funny guys doing what they're really great at that I hope people end up seeing maybe after Thor. It'll cause them to go back and see what this guy's been doing, because we mentioned Eagle versus Shark. That was a movie that, for me, kind of did come out of nowhere. And it's brilliant. I love it. And I do want to try and go out and see the Wilder People. I didn't even realize that that was available here yet. Certainly, these are smaller movies that you have to go seek out and find. But I think if you do find them, it's probably worth it.
Yeah, and I'm excited to see where his career goes. Jermaine Clement has built a solid career. He showed up in The Friendly Giant. He's the voice of the Minions. Like, he's one of your go-to.
He's in the Disney movie with The Rock.
Yeah, Mona. He's one of those. He's going to be showing up in a lot of stuff. He has been showing up in a lot of stuff. So he's turned what he does into a pretty solid career. I really want to see Waititi blow up, because he's in a weird position. You're signed on to Thor 3. Is there going to be a Thor 4? So I think he's in an odd position to where he's got that singular Marvel movie, because who knows what goes on with Thor after that, whereas when you're signed on for the first Doctor Strange or the first Black Panther,
right. There's
that chance that, hey, if I do good, I'll do the next one. And who knows if they haven't reached a four yet with anything. So his options are going to be wide open. Or I really hope he brings that Thor franchise back and makes it another relevant franchise.
And certainly this is an interesting way to go about it. It's kind of breaking, not that it's breaking form, but it is more akin to some of the humorous stuff. And it would be interesting to see, you know, this guy that's really good at making offbeat comedies, if after having, I would imagine the way Marvel's going now, that this is going to be easily a top 25 grossing movie of all time, I would assume. Again, just based on the trajectory of where things are now. If you have one of those, on the one hand, it buys you a lot of clout to be able to do whatever you want. But on the other hand, it sort of puts you in that realm of, now you have to keep making movies like this. I mean, James Gunn is doing the Guardians sequel, but I don't really know what else he's had the time to do recently or the opportunity to do recently.
But you look at why TT is kind of in the position Shane Black was in Iron Man 3, because there's no plans after Iron Man 3. So he does that. It's a $200 million movie. He's in a position to make anything he wants. Okay, I want to make The Nice Guys. I want to get Doc Savage off the ground.
Yeah.
And so, like, Nice Guys comes out. It's not a massive hit, but the wheels are already rolling on Doc Savage. So, like, he's got a couple things. And
it allows you to make maybe some of your passion projects, like Nice Guys was for
Black.
And
then hope that at least one of those hits up. And like Tom Cruise always said, when I do three movies, I need at least one of those to be really good because then I can do three more movies. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of the thing. Like, yeah, Nice Guys didn't really, it was very Shane Black.
Yes.
But it wasn't Iron Man 3 level, obviously. But if Doc Savage comes out starring The Rock and makes a lot of money, then
all signs point to it
Shane
will.
Black's still in a position to where, all right, I can go make another Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Nice Guys, and then do something else to make some money for a studio. So it puts them in a position to where they can make what they want, but still also kind of play along with everything. And imagine him doing like a Lethal Weapon type movie, one of those buddy action movies, which essentially is what Thor is going to be. And that's not really as much of a genre as it used to be.
Well, I mean, you've got the Kevin Central, Hart stuff.
Yeah. Central Intelligence and Ride Along.
The ones that he does. You had the Jump Street movies, which were absolutely that and a lot more. Having this does give you the opportunity to do other things. And again, we're assuming a giant success for Thor. It could fall on its face. I mean, people could maybe not get it. It might be too funny for its own good, and people just, oh, man, this isn't really.
I don't think so, because I don't think what he's, like, I don't think what we do in the shadows is, like, over anybody's head.
Oh, I don't either.
Even if you're not into dry humor, I think there's enough of the sight gags. Like, that's what he does well, is there's the sight gags there and the humor. Even that Thor and Daryl thing, to see Thor do some of that stuff is just funny.
Yeah, I mean, if I had to bet, I would bet on this being a success. And certainly, if it is, then that's going to put him in that realm of directors that you know their name. Certainly, he's not there now. And if you make a movie that makes $300 million, then people do, you do a couple of those, people do tend to know your name. A director that we certainly do know his name, will be the subject of our episode later this week. Joel Schumacher's The Lost Boys, to keep the vampire theme. Not quite as humorous as this one, but again, it's not necessarily your typical vampire fare. They're sort of neo-vampires doing neo-vampire kind of things.
They're kids that got ridiculous power.
Yeah, and this is how they choose to express that power. Whereas the guys from What We Do in the Shadows are just kind of sticking to the shadows, washing some dishes, going to their ball. We'll hit up the 1987 Joel Schumacher, The Lost Boys, which again, kind of in the news recently as it's been announced, I believe the CW is picking that up to kind of fill their vampire show quota that apparently they have to have, or the vampire union will get very angry at them. That's this week. Next week, we're on a little bit of a Peter Jackson kick with Dead Alive and The Frighteners, and then rounding out the month with Saw and our Halloween episode, much anticipated Halloween episode, which I'm sure will be absolutely phenomenal.
It'll be spooky good.
Scary good. So check back later this week for The Lost Boys, and then certainly the rest of the month for increasingly outstanding episodes. But until then,
keep it up.